So I'll give you my definition of constitution. It might be a bit different than yours. So my definition is if you take away, if you strip away, it's basically nature and nurture here. So if you strip away all of the nurture, basically, so the environment, the diet, the family life, the any traumas, the toxins they may have had, that fundamentally underneath, there are different types of people in the world. And doctors all knew this until 100 years ago or 150 years ago. It's obvious, and now it's just denied. But you
Right.
can see it in a family, like a family of four boys in the family. They'll all be often be wildly different. Physically, they'll look different. They'll have different aptitudes. They'll have different interests. They'll be better at different things. They'll have different susceptibilities to illnesses, but they're genetically very similar. They're born in the same house. They have the same environment. They eat the same food. They go to the same school. So that would be my definition.
This is the Otto Community Podcast. All interviews presented on the Otto Community Podcast are designed to provide information and inspiration only. Guests of the podcast may present opinions and anecdotes that are solely their own. And as always, before beginning any treatment protocol, consult with your preferred medical provider. Hey, everybody, it's Erin with the Otto Community Podcast. I have a great guest on today. He's somebody who was instrumental in our journey very early on when my son was first diagnosed with PANDAS at around age 7. And I'd love for you all to meet him. This is Alan Freestone. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hello, Erin. Very nice to see you again. It's been a few years.
It has been. It's almost like a reunion of sorts, I think. But so, Alan, you are a homeopath. You're working primarily with children with autism, PANS and PANDAS, and I'm assuming other autoimmune conditions and things of that nature. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I initially specialized in autism, and then parents kept coming to me and saying, do you treat PANS, PANDAS as well? And at the time, I had never even heard of this thing. So at some point, I thought, I'm going to have to figure out what this is and what we can do about it. So that became my side specialism, let's say. So I've seen about 1,800 cases now of, in total, mostly autism, and then maybe 400 PANDAS cases, something like that. I think, well, no, you can ask me, but I was going to just say, I think there seems to be a real issue with people's immune systems. I am using, so there's a group of remedies called nozodes, which are homeopathic remedies made from disease material. So it could be a bacteria or virus itself, or it could be, sometimes it could be like a tubercular, like sputum from somebody with tuberculosis, something disgusting like that. But it's basically any disease product, or even a sample of cancer tissue. Quite a lot of homeopathic remedies made from those as well. But I've been using an increasing number of nozode remedies because it seems like, and it might just be the people coming to me, but I think there's something more going on here in our wider society. I think there seems to be a breaking down of immune systems. And these nozode remedies, I think, are like secret weapons to really help people's immune systems relearn how to deal with bugs. You know, we should be able to have a strep infection and recover from it and go back to health. That's what we're designed to do, or anything else, you know. So as I say, I've been using these increasingly, whether it's for strep or be all sorts of things, herpes viruses, Epstein-Barr viruses, and mold, and on and on and on. I think it's a major task in the years ahead.
Yeah, definitely. So let's back up a little bit and tell me, how did you get involved with the autism community? What was it that led you down that path?
I wanted something difficult and meaty to treat that people couldn't deny the results of. So when I was training in the late 2000s, so I graduated in 2009, but when I was training during those years, there was a real concerted attack. Well, it's still going on, but it was spiking. There was a real concerted attack against homeopathy, especially here in the UK. So I thought to myself, right, I want a I want a specialism that you cannot deny right my results. It's not subjective. You know, it's like the kid was spinning around and smearing poop on the walls and screaming and didn't know who their parents were and didn't know to, okay, this kid is now calm. They're conversational. They are now mainstream school. You know, it would be such a striking change that you couldn't deny homeopathy. So
Right.
that was kind of my initial thing. And also you have to look around and say, right, what's the problems of the age? And that was it. You know, if I was living in London in the late 1800s, it would have been tuberculosis or something like that. So that would have been rife in those days. So like autism has just exploded. So it's something that needs help. So that was another reason, you know.
Sure. Yeah, so we met. Okay, so my son's now 15. It was probably when he was about 7, when we were treating him. So, 8 years ago or so when I first met you. And, I don't know if you know this story or maybe you recall, but at the time my son was making his world much, much smaller. Not leaving the house, not wanting to do things, outside of his comfort zone whatsoever. And eventually he wound up essentially living in a cardboard box in my living room. And he had made it his world so, so incredibly small. And it came to the point when, as a parent, you do everything you possibly can. I was familiar with homeopathy at the time, but I had never really utilized it beyond, just, small remedies for acute situations. And eventually we went to see you on the recommendation of a friend. And I think it was maybe the second remedy we tried. And that was the first indication to me that homeopathy really worked because for a year, my son hadn't left the house. And for a few months, he hadn't left the box. And the first day that we tried the remedies, he left the house twice. So those kinds of stories, I think, are hugely important and hugely inspirational. And to be frank, is the beginning of my own personal journey to then become a homeopath and work with the same population because it's desperately needed. There are nowhere near enough homeopaths to treat the amount of children that are suffering. So,
Right.
yeah. So tell me a little bit, maybe about a few of the stories that were remarkable for you as a homeopath.
You've put me on the spot with that one. It becomes quite difficult to recall them because I have sometimes I may see 16 people in a day, so it all sort of it's hard to know that. But that case, what you describe, I actually don't remember the living in the cardboard box. But there's been a lot of cases between
Of course.
that and this. But that's not atypical. You know, that I expect there to be significant improvements with these cases. Yeah, sorry, I can't actually recall a pandas case off the top of my head. I'm sure it'll come to me.
Sure.
People come to me and they send me testimonials and I say, oh, that's fantastic, thank you. And then I put it down, and then 4 months later I still haven't posted it on my website because I just don't have the time to. You talk about working on your practice or in your practice, and I seem to spend my time being like a almost like an employee, just working in my practice and seeing patients. So I never get to share those, you know, these stories, and then I'll discover it after a year or so, and I'll be like, oh wow, I'd completely forgotten about this. That was such a good response. So yeah. So sorry, I'm not giving you a very concrete example there.
That's okay. I think, whenever people come to me and they describe a story that, is somewhat remarkable, I don't like to take credit for that because to me it's homeopathy that's doing the work. Like I'm just the detective. I'm, discovering the different remedies. I'm the one who is, done the research and all of that, and I can give them recommendations, but homeopathy is actually doing the work because, you don't win all the cases, right? So some of the cases, go fantastic first remedy off, and other cases, take five or six remedies to see, some of the significant changes. So, and some
And
people don't take.
sometimes that you don't get improvements. Or I've had so many where there's this old quote, I can't remember who it's by, but it was a politicians, and they talk about every political career ends in failure. You know, eventually, even if you make it to the president, eventually you'll be unemployed. But it kind of feels like that sometimes with, as a homeopath. So sometimes people come and then you don't see them again in your head, and and it's, you're always trying to fix, you want to fix everybody, and you think, oh, that okay, and then maybe they come back to you after a year or 18 months and they say, oh no, that remedy was amazing, but there was no, you never knew that.
Right,
Yeah.
right. Yeah, definitely. I've definitely had that experience where you treat somebody, you give them one remedy, and then, there's this amazing progress, but you don't ever get to hear about it, because sometimes, the best testimonial is when they don't come back because they're doing so well.
There's a really good Canadian homeopath. I've forgotten his name, but he's written a book on miasms. Do you recall who that is?
I can't think of the name off the top of my head.
I'm busy Googling here in the background.
Yeah, sure.
But he there was a brilliant quote from one of his books, and it was, homeopathy can cure the effects of a disease even if the infectious agent is no longer present.
Yep.
And I think that's such a powerful sentence. I've been meaning to, again, I've not had the time, but I've been meaning to turn that into some larger blog post or article, because that's one of the magical things about homeopathy that I think other modalities maybe can't address. I'm sure people listening to this will have seen examples where your kid may have had an infection and had a bad reaction, maybe like a PANDAS thing, something like that. And now they've got the PANDAS symptoms, but they've gone back and the doctor's saying, no, there's no strep here, but the kid is having the symptoms as if they have strep. And I'm back to the nosewood remedies as really powerful secret weapons that we have. I think it's almost like a your body gets stuck in that as if they still have that infection. It's more like an energetic infection, and I'm just making that term up,
Sure.
but it's more like that. So
Yeah.
even though you can test and no, the viral titers are no longer elevated, da da da, or whatever, but you've got the symptoms of that viral infection you have, homeopathy can help your body overcome that thing, you know.
Right. So when you're looking at a new case, what is it that you're looking for primarily in the initial visit? Are you looking for infectious triggers? Are you looking for a constitutional type remedy? Maybe we could talk about what a constitutional remedy is, and what
Maybe
we're
my
looking for
definition
as
will be
homeopaths.
different. Yeah, certainly. So I think of homeopathy like a toolbox. So the toolbox is called homeopathy, and then there's different tools inside it. So I think of those as the different methodologies of homeopathy. So I
Right.
think sometimes people can, the old saying is, to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So sometimes people may have been trained. Well, I was trained as classical homeopath, but that's all they do and that's all they know. Sometimes it's amazing where you're just looking at the symptoms and you're trying to match a remedy with those symptoms and that's it. Sometimes that's amazing, but in my experience, autism cases, PANS, PANDAS, these types of cases, autoimmune things, often that doesn't cut it. So I think of it like a toolbox, and then within that there's different methods. So you could have the nosodes, you could have a detox homeopathy, which I use a hell of a lot, whether that's for vaccines or heavy metals or labor drugs or IVF drugs or lots of other things. I've had cases of people regressing into autism after antibiotics and really quite unusual things. So that's another one of the tools. And then another tool might be where we're looking at the case and we suspect that maybe it started. So maybe PANS, PANDAS, autoimmune stuff started after some emotional trauma. So again, a different tool in the toolbox. So I'm quite sure it's similar to you. I take the case and in my head, I've got, okay, what's the most appropriate tool for the job here?
Right.
And it's different. So it's not like, oh, I'm the guy that thinks that all autoimmune illnesses are, there's grief in the family or something. I'm not, sometimes that's the case, and then sometimes there's nothing like that. It's just for whatever reason that person's immune system has not responded appropriately to that infectious agent. That's it.
Right.
And other times it's completely mysterious and we have to go and use sort of more traditional classical things where we're just looking at the symptoms and yeah.
You know, I have a theory on that too, especially with some of these kids that are coming in who are just really severely affected, perhaps non-speakers. And you get to a point where, you know, the interpretation of what their personality might be is so covered up by symptomatology that it's very difficult to get to a constitutional type remedy. And I do think that plays a huge role for us as homeopaths, you know, coming at this situation and trying to figure out, okay, if I'm only looking at this case as a constitutional, I'm looking for the constitutional remedy. I'm looking at it from the classical homeopathic perspective, then perhaps I'm going to miss by a mile because there's way too much toxicity in this particular child. And so, yeah, I'm in 100% agreement. So a lot of times we have to peel back the layers first, you know, get some of the toxicity out of the way, and then we can, you know, start to look at a constitutional remedy. But I don't know if.
Yeah, I totally agree. I didn't know how deep to go into the homeopathic philosophy and things, but I really like the George Vithulkas take on mm-hmm. things. So he's completely classical, probably, you know, perhaps the best homeopath practicing in the world, perhaps, right. Or he's certainly up there with the best, but he would not have any truck whatsoever with these more modern methods that we would be using for detox or whatever else. He would talk about that an autism case, they often have the level of health is so low that they're not giving you the symptoms to tell you what, they're not giving you an indicated remedy. And that's been my experience, exactly, just as you said. So I think that's another reason why, let's say, classical homeopathy isn't the right tool often, because they don't have enough energy yet. And then what I've found is going through the process of maybe you're detoxing or treating, giving nozodes or whatever, but as that person's health improves, they've got more energy, and then you'll start getting symptoms pointing to the classical remedy. Right. As their health improves. That's been my experience. So I'll give you my definition of constitution. It might be a bit different than yours. So my definition is, if you strip away, it's basically nature and nurture here. So if you strip away all of the nurture, basically, so the environment, the diet, the family life, the any traumas, the toxins they may have had, that fundamentally underneath, there are different types of people in the world. And doctors all knew this until 100 years ago or 150 years ago. It's obvious, and now it's just denied. But right. You can see it in a family, like a family of four boys in the family. They'll all often be wildly different. Physically, they'll look different. They'll have different aptitudes. They'll have different interests. They'll be better at different things. They'll have different susceptibilities to illnesses. But they're genetically very similar. They're born in the same house. They have the same environment. They eat the same food. They go to the same school. So that would be my definition. That's a constitution. And often it would be another idea with that would be often it'll be a mineral remedy will be in a constitution because it's kind of the fundamental building block of that.
Sure.
So that's my definition of constitution. Whereas I think other people would use, say, constitution when they mean, let's say, totality remedy, I would maybe call that, which is a bit different. Yeah,
definitely. It's really interesting to note that, you know, so many of us homeopaths, you know, practice a little bit differently. And I do think that's an important way to find a homeopath. A lot of times, you know, people struggle with, you know, this whole question of, okay, well, should I go with a classic homeopath? Should I, you know, there's this whole school of thinking. But, you know, a lot of times I always say, you know, you want to go with a homeopath that you connect with too, because, you know, homeopathy is so much about, you know, telling stories and, you know, explaining the timelines and those kinds of things. And if you don't feel comfortable with the homeopath that you're working with, you know, I don't think there's much hope of, you know, getting to a great remedy either. So I think that's another important point to add. What would you say, because I get this question a lot, constantly, I have parents who come, you know, to me through different avenues, Facebook groups and things like that. And it's always the question of, well, my kid wets the bed. What remedy would you give for that?
I had that and, to go before this call.
Right. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I feel like I'm answering consistently. Or, you know, if somebody thinks, you know, oh, well, your kid sounds a little bit similar to mine because they had, you know, X, Y, and Z symptoms. And so they want to know what remedies I've used for my own child or in a different case or things like that. And it's not quite that simple. So I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, I think because people are coming from this biomedical mindset, that's how they approach us. So sometimes it's a bit of education to try and explain, oh, that's not quite how it works. And other times I will be giving little remedies alongside the main remedy to try and address certain things, you know. Yeah, but I think it's just, I think so often it's the biomedical mindset. And I'm not totally critical of that, because I think that can have, you can sometimes get good results with that. But it's not holistic, is it? It's not, it's the homeopath would be saying, oh no, all of those symptoms are all point, they're all connected. You know, it's not like one remedy for your knee and one remedy for your wetting the bed and another one because you can't sleep and another one because you've got OCD. And it would be, you want a remedy that's going to hit all of those things, you know. I think another thing that it must be overwhelming for parents is you've gone down the biomedical route. And again, it can be really useful for me, because if you've had tests done and you can see, I don't know, measles titers are 400 times higher than they should be or something like that, that's an enormous piece of data that's going to really help the case. But I think, I'm sure you've had the same experience, you'll often get people coming and they've had lots of tests and there is everything's off. They've got this virus, they got that virus, they got high strep, you got this, you got that, you got, and it's they got high yeast, they've got, you know, they've got everything. And it's just like, oh, well, I have, the number of times people have said, oh, I'm sure you've never heard of a case as complicated as mine before. if I had a pint every time I've heard that. But I think often it seems really scary and confusing, but actually that's just part of the story. That's telling us, okay, maybe one or two of those things is the main culprit. And then the rest of them are just opportunistic infections because the immune system's down. It's not like, oh, we've got 15 things to treat and we have to treat them all at the same time. It's not true. So as you said earlier about building the timeline, that's such a vital thing with people. So maybe, well, I had a case a while ago, and after flu vaccines, asthma started, let's say. Mm-hmm. So that person may have had tests and, oh, they've got mycoplasma pneumonia, they've got this, all these things. But if you look at the timeline, it's like, yeah, but it all started, the immune system went awry after that.
Right.
So instead of dealing with all those things, you could just go, well, if you fix that, if you can detox that flu vaccine, the immune system gets strengthened and the immune system will then start dealing appropriately with the other things.
You know, right.
I'm sure you've had exactly the same.
Yeah. And, you know, I think so often in the biomedical world, when we're trying to heal our kids, you know, parents get desperate, especially when you're dealing with a kid who, you know, has very disruptive tendencies, things like fecal play and you know, anger and aggression and those types of things. It becomes a very desperate situation for the parents. And so, you know, they often will want a quick fix. And unfortunately, a lot of the conventional biomedical treatments want you to jump down all of these rabbit holes and to address each of them, you know, from a very mechanistic perspective. So like, okay, we're going to, you have high, you know, Lyme and Bartonella, we're going to address that first, then we're going to address, you know, mold, and then we're going to address, you know, all of these things over and over and over again.
Antivirals followed by antibiotics, followed by antifungals, followed by And then you go around in this loop, and then you speak to the parents after 3 years and kids are still in the same place they were, you know.
Right. Right. And that was definitely our experience. Not that I don't think that some of these practitioners are very well-meaning. I know that they, you know, sincerely want to help, and many of them have struggled themselves or have children who have struggled. But unfortunately, I feel like this pathogen chasing can be a very dangerous model to keep following over and over and over again, because there's no way out, at least from my own experience. I don't know.
It's a bit like that expression again, the to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
That's
their problem. They just keep using the same model.
Yes. Yeah.
But I sort of think maybe I'm being too harsh on them, because maybe there's lots of people have really good experiences with that model and I never see them because they're fixed. So maybe I'm only seeing people that that's not enough for, because I can imagine that there would be a bit like antidepressants. Let's say somebody has grief and they're not coping very well and they go to their doctor and they get prescribed antidepressants. Sometimes that's just enough. It gets them over the thing and then they go back to functioning and actually the antidepressants were okay. So it could be something similar like that. They get antivirals. It takes the burden off the immune system enough for the body to get back to some sort of equilibrium and off they go. So I am conscious that, you know, I'm the window I see the world from is maybe through the parents that didn't work for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess one of the things I say is that I work with complex children, you know, because ultimately it doesn't really matter what the diagnosis, right? Because the diagnosis is simply a label that, you know, and often only a clinical diagnosis too. So, you know, we're talking about just somebody's opinion essentially.
You meet enough ticks in the box. Yep. He's this. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think I don't typically work from that that construct, you know, saying, okay, well, I only treat this or that kind of a thing, because, yeah, oftentimes it's more of a general case, you know, with not very specific diagnoses. However, you know, you're talking about symptomatology that looks very similar. So,
well, yes, I'm sure you've experienced this. You can have two cases, very similar symptoms, wildly different reasons, causes of the symptoms. And at the minute, their sort of umbrella diagnosis terms, they're labeling them as the same thing, and they're actually completely different things. They just have similar symptoms presenting.
Yeah. I mean, especially with, you know, autism spectrum, I see kids, some kids who are, you know, the parents tell me, oh yeah, well, they go to school and they, you know, are in regular class and they, you know, do this and they do that and they play sports and, you know, and to me, I think, gosh, that really doesn't sound like, you know, this other case I have where the child is, you know, 14 years old and unfortunately wearing a diaper and, you know, all of those kinds of things. So I understand that it's called a spectrum, but the symptoms to me are so wildly different sometimes.
Their umbrella has just expanded. It's become almost meaningless sometimes. Like I've had cases like a female case where she's social and she's speaking and but she had some sort of little, maybe she had speech delay, let's say something like that. Not that much, but she was had friends at school. She was doing all this and she gets the diagnosis of autism and they say, oh yeah, girls present differently than boys. But it's like, you've expanded the definition so widely. 10 years ago, that would have been, oh, she's got mild speech delay or something else. It wouldn't have been labeled as autism. And I think some of it is the push is because of for funding. So if they get that diagnosis, then the school district gets funding then. So there's a pushing towards that, I think.
Yeah. I think ultimately, you know, we have this serious epidemic of kids that are, whether it's autism or just, you know, toxicity, which I think is probably more likely the case, you know, we're barraging their bodies with, you know, far more things than even we were exposed to as children. And so, but, you know, God forbid we actually take a look at, you know, what we're trying to to put in the environment and in their bodies food wise. And I mean, it's just horrific, but I guess in your opinion, so I know you work a lot with kids in the US. I'm just curious as to what the sentiment is in the UK, what's going on there with autism. Is it very similar to the US? Is there a huge influx in autism cases or as much as in the US as well?
I don't know the exact data, actually. It's certainly very widespread, but we have less, I would say there's less vaccines in the schedule and there's less compulsion. There's no, you don't have to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, they'll try and guilt you into it and things, but there's no law that says you have to be, whereas that's not the case in a lot of states in the US. And our food standards would be higher. They can't put a lot of stuff into it. As far as I know, there's no GMO. Or if it is, it's very limited compared to...
Right.
And glyphosates and things. There's a stricter food stuff. So I think they're probably exposed to less here, mm-hmm. I would guess. But yeah, it's still very prevalent. But the mainstream is in complete denial. Their models of what's going on is just nonsense, mm-hmm. you know. So we're not sort of some enlightened thing. It's like, oh yeah, they know what's going on. They're just in complete denial.
Sure.
Parents getting a PANDAS diagnosis. As far as I know, I was just speaking to somebody last week. There's one doctor in the NHS that will give you a PANDAS diagnosis. One. Otherwise, no chance. And you probably have to go to him privately because he's probably so busy.
Sure.
So we're not sort of the enlightened ones. I find it amazing. I'm sure you've heard of this phenomenon, the Somali disease, they call it, where so many Somalis emigrated to the US. And is it Minnesota? There's like certain states where there's quite large populations of them. And the percentage of their kids that get diagnosed with autism is absolutely through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, I think, is to do with the vaccinations. Well, probably genetic susceptibility and then...
Sure.
Vaccinations. Or double vaccinations. Maybe they're getting revaccinated because they don't because the US don't trust their other ones. And I've got there's a lot of people that have been coming to me from Eritrea, mm-hmm. either in the US or the UK. And the same thing, there seems to be a really high percentage of their kids that are being diagnosed with autism. And then, you know, you go into the building the timeline and you're asking about the health history and the family history. And it just doesn't exist. Back home, mm-hmm. doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing. It's like everything's fine. And then they go to the West and then suddenly the kids are now pink, 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 pink. It's I think I've got off topic there. I can't remember. I don't remember what the original question was.
Yeah. You know, I think it is really interesting. I have noticed a lot of actually people coming to me from who have immigrated to the US from various countries. I think in my practice, I see more from India, actually.
I've got a lot of Indians that live in the US now, yeah.
Yeah, and seeing all of that. And interestingly enough, you know, India is one of the countries that has utilized homeopathy for many, many years. And so, you know, and utilized it very successfully alongside conventional medicine. You know, it's not that they shun conventional medicine at all. It's just that homeopathy is much more widely accepted. And I know that was originally the case in the UK, but I know things have gotten a little bit more strict. What is it? You know, I know you guys have far more homeopathic pharmacies, you know, on the corner or whatever. But I don't know what that looks like today. Is that still a thriving community or how does that...
I think you're
into it.
Probably you speak to people in the US and I think they've got false impression of what it's like in the UK. There are big famous in homeopathy pharmacies here and they've been here for a long time now, but they're certainly not on the corner. Mm-hmm. You'll get like there's like a chain of health food shops. So there's one in every town and they've got a little homeopathic section, but it's sort of in the back, around the corner. It's not front and center at all. It's not widely used, I would say. There used to be, when the NHS was founded, they basically compulsory purchased all the private clinics and hospitals and everything else that was existing. I think they've sort of got a myth that there was nothing and then suddenly there was the NHS. But of course there was this... There had to be lots of treatments available. And then there was about five homeopathic hospitals in the NHS that survived from 1948 up until, I think they've all gone now. The buildings are still there, but gradually they were just attacked.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sort of researching it in the city that I live near now. I was researching what was before the NHS came along, and there was several homeopathic hospitals, private homeopathic hospitals here, and that the sort of the pharmaceutical monoculture came along and removed all that at one fell swoop. So yeah, it's not it's not paradise here at all. But there's no restrictions. Anybody can walk into or order any remedy and any potency. You don't need a prescription. You can just mm-hmm. So in that, from that point of view, it's not bad. Right. I think it's just I feel bad for English or British families with kids with autism and PANDAS and things, because they're often been so I don't want to say brainwashed, but persuaded by the relentless anti-homeopathy in the sort of the, we call them the broadsheets, but like the papers with the sort of high-end newspapers or media. It's just been an unrelenting, you know, it's just a mockery. They just make a mockery of it. It's not a real thing. Come on, be serious. So they don't have access to it. So most of my, if I did a audit of my patients, so many of them are Indian, but some in India, but other than living here or living in the US or mm-hmm. living other places, Chinese people, American people, but I do not have very many people, British people here, you mm-hmm. know, white British people here, because they just have been persuaded that it's not a real thing. So
mm-hmm.
these people have kids that are suffering and they're not having any, you know, not having any help.
Yeah, I think in some ways that's the benefit of homeopathy being essentially obliterated in the US, right? Because people didn't know about homeopathy, and also, you know, there wasn't, the AMA had kind of given up on propaganda. They didn't need to do that. And I think that's what led to the resurgence of homeopathy in the US.
Like pushing something down, and then as soon as you take the pressure off, it just comes back up.
Right, right. Exactly. So, yeah, and interesting what you said about people being able to just walk into a homeopathic pharmacy and purchase whatever remedy that they might need, because, you know, in the U.S., we're dealing with, I just interviewed Paula Brown from Americans for Homeopathy Choice, and we were speaking about all of the restrictions that the FDA is trying to place upon homeopathic medicines in the United States. And it's
quite
just
amazing. Quite amazing.
It's been criminal, you know, and it makes many of us, you know, kind of do the panic buying thing, I think.
Yes, yes.
You know? Yeah.
Prepping.
What I think is
we can use geography and politics to our advantage, because you can just play geo arbitrage. What I mean is, let's say they made it illegal in the UK and the US. Well, the UK homeopaths could just treat the US patients, and the US homeopaths could just treat the UK patients, because how could they can't stop that. Like, right. It's illegal for me to treat child in Sweden under 12 years old. They've really clamped down on homeopathy in Sweden. But I do it over Zoom. How are they going to? They can't stop me.
Right.
Whereas they could, if I was in Sweden, they could come to my door and, you know, charge me with something. I don't know what it would be. So I think we can use geography to get around their little Sweden will not. You can no longer post remedies to Sweden. That's another thing. They've clamped down on. It'll be stopped by the customs. So they've got around that already. There are dispensaries in the UK that aren't official, they're not registered pharmacies, dispensaries, so they will send remedies out in plain envelopes. It just looks like a letter,
right?
And it gets through. So there's always ways around the restrictions.
Interesting. I have an elderly patient in Sweden, so I may need to get the name of that pharmacy.
I will give you it now. I'll put it in a link now, so I don't forget.
Okay. So tell me about your schooling. Where did you train in homeopathy, and who were some of your teachers that, you know, you enjoyed?
So I trained at the Center for Homeopathic Education, mm-hmm. which is the largest college in Europe still, as far as I'm aware. So that was in London. It was in Regent's College in London. And they got removed from Regent's College after some campaigners went after them. I really enjoyed it. It was a really amazing education. It was amazing. I think that's one of the great things, because homeopathy is so small, you can be in touch with the best homeopaths out there, the best lecturers, are the best, you know, you get to socialize, whereas anything else, any other sort of subject is so big that
yeah,
you know. So the one that I really liked, her name's Hilary Dorian.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so you've come across.
Actually, I'm taking a course with her right now, a year-long
on
course.
Nozzles? On bowel nozzles, no?
No, it's a live course, and we're learning about homeopathy through the lens of traditional Chinese medicine.
Yeah, because she trained as that before she became a homeopath.
Yeah, and it's been, I love her. I've been really intrigued by all of the things she says. I think she's a fantastic homeopath.
Yeah. So she was my, but I don't want to, there was also other really good ones, but I was really drawn to her a lot because she practices in a very practical way, I think a lot of physical general prescribing. And you could sit in her clinics for free. She could just, if you wanted to, as a homeopathic student, you could just sit in and observe her working. And you just got to see this, you got to see homeopathy working, and next. And it was really empowering, because it wasn't like, you go to some lectures and they're talking about new esoteric remedies that, oh, the book's not out yet, but it's some, you know, and it's some Arctic willow. I'm just making that up, but you know, some
yeah,
new.
Yeah.
Some, and her, it was just polycrest. And if you looked, again, if you did an audit of my prescriptions, polycrest, I think I found it really empowering. And I had to, my mum came to the graduation, and I had to say, Mum, you have to meet this lady. So I did that. And then, so when I first was treated, I decided to specialize in autism in 2011 or 12 or something like that. I was originally trying to treat them classically, and I got a few successes, but it just wasn't working very well. And then I got a knockoff copy of the student notes for cease therapy, you know, where mm-hmm. so detox homeopathy, and I started using that, and the difference was night and day. That responses were just, I was like, wow, this is an important tool for us. And then I saw about 150 cases, and I was getting good results, but some of them didn't work, and it didn't make sense to me why it didn't work, or I was getting aggravations of the symptoms or something like that. So then I went to a guy in Holland, Ton Jansen. I'm sure you've heard mm-hmm. of him. He does what was called homeopathic detox therapy. Basically, it was just a rebranded cease therapy with changes. He's changed it again. I think it's called human chemistry or something now. Mm-hmm. He's called. But that sort of deepened my knowledge and allowed me to work out, that's why some of those cases didn't work, or that's why I got an aggravation. And then I just wanted to see as many patients as possible to refine what I was doing and test it out. So yeah, that's really it. I read the books, but I haven't really been to conferences and courses for quite a while in homeopathy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, well, especially for me with all of the stuff going on with COVID, and I had a lot of patients, I don't know if you experienced this as well, but a lot of patients who were getting like reactivations of old illnesses after experiencing COVID. Oh. And then it's huge. And not only that, then after the vaccines were introduced, those that chose to take the vaccine, I was dealing with a lot of kind of after effects from some of that. Maybe you could speak to some of that and your experience with that.
Well, I've certainly seen it as well. I think I was shying away. I've sort of shied away from the COVID, the long-term effects of COVID or the effects of the COVID vaccine, just because I think I would find it too overwhelming. I'd need to have another two of me to see it all. So I haven't sort of gone out there and asked for them, but of course they just come to your practice. So yeah, I think I probably have had similar reactions to you. There does seem to be some long COVID things, or as you say, I've had some kids where they got they sort of were panda sticks, but then they were doing really well. And then COVID hit, and now they've everything's come back again. So mm-hmm. I've got a few of those on the go at the moment, actually. But I'm still sort of groping around and trying to figure out what this thing is. I haven't really had enough experience using the COVID nosode. I've used it, but I haven't enough experience to be able to say, oh yes, I know when to use this. It's kind of experimental at the moment. Sure. I haven't actually used the spike protein remedy. There's a remedy just made from that.
Yeah.
I haven't tried that yet. So I can't really talk about it too much. I just know it's there, and I know homeopathy is going to have the tools to deal with it, but I just haven't seen enough cases to have a sort of a protocol. Oh yes, this is what I do, because I haven't figured it out.
Sure. I do think everything is emerging, you know, slowly, and I think we will get there, but yeah, it's been interesting for me. You know, I had some of my current patients who then, you know, either had COVID or took the vaccine and then had, you know, recurring symptoms after.
Yeah, I don't think it's as simple as, oh, just detox the COVID vaccine and we'll get back to where we were. I think there's more needed than that. I think it seems to be having quite a profound effect on some people.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, personally, I had the experience of having COVID last year, the beginning of last year, and then afterwards got very ill again multiple times and had titers drawn, and my Epstein-Barr was extremely high all over again. So that was, you know, I do feel like there's something going on with reactivation of latent kind of viral load going
this
on.
This is
also
why I would love to be collaborating more. I just feel so much of, so most homeopaths, certainly in the UK, don't practice or see very few people, but the us busy ones, we're all sort of isolated in our own little bubble,
yeah,
treating people. And I would love to go to conferences or things where people are presenting and they've seen, right, here's 500 cases of, and this is what we've discovered, and here's before and after. And I think we're really missing at the minute. I just feel like they're sort of atomized. It's like, I don't know, if there was a hospital department and they were fixing knees and there's 10 surgeons there and they do 500 knee operations, they would be a center of excellence. They would know, they'd be able to collaborate and share techniques, and you know, but they couldn't do that if they're all atomized and they're all just working from their own little. I feel that's missing at the minute. I
think, you know, in general, I think the world has become far more isolated over the last few years. And, you know, I've kind of made it my mission to really create more community and get people together and working together and talking about these things that, you know, cases that we're seeing success with and, you know, cases that we're having trouble with, those kinds of things. I think it's really important to, you know, reach out and say, hey, you know, this is working great for me, or you know what, I'm really struggling with this particular issue. Maybe somebody else has a recommendation. So
like a year or two ago, I got I think it was sort of still in the middle of the whole COVID thing. And I bought a book, and it was some Indian homeopath, and it was about their COVID. They had worked in a hospital and they had seen like 1,000 cases. And I thought, this is brilliant. And it was just a list of remedies and keynotes. There was nothing of any substance there. You know, you can guess it yourself. You know,
right.
The typical flu remedies, that was kind of, or respiratory remedies, that was kind of what was coming up. So this leads me to it's not really an announcement, but I've resisted trying to build myself bigger for years because, well, I think I just wanted to see lots of patients to get a good, really good grounding. But also maybe it's UK homeopaths more than other people, but they often were a bit flaky. So, or they said they wanted to build something, but then they would go off and do something else, or they couldn't see patients because they were, you know, whatever excuse. But I've decided I'm actually going to build something now, sort of bigger than me. So I've got the name for it. It's called the Hahnemann Clinic. That's what it's going to be called.
Nice.
And we have a landing page. Oh no, I'm not allowed to share it with you at the minute because it's still in. But we have a landing page. So basically, it's going to be the idea will be like a center of excellence for homeopathy, and initially specializing in autism PANS, PANDAS things, but then I'm going to add other teams for other specialisms, whether it's cancer or long COVID would probably be a useful one, or you know, whatever. There's lots of them. As soon as you start thinking of the things that the world needs, there'll be lots of specialisms. So that's going to be my idea, where actually we are going to, the idea is a center of excellence where you'll be sharing resources and presenting and gathering data and all the rest of it. So not much use for your community, because they tend to be, it's more autoimmunity, autism. This is more an announcement for other homeopaths. So once my landing page is up, then I'm going to be taking applications. So
awesome.
And the other thing was that I was treating people in Pakistan and Egypt and places like this, sort of developing countries, and I'm always guilty about, well, they couldn't afford it, basically.
Right.
So I was doing discounts, or I was doing it for free sometimes, but I was sort of, I had a bit of resentment as well, because I need to pay my bills, you know. Right. And then I just had a epiphany. I was like, why don't I just teach homeopaths there these methods, and then they can do it. So I have a little group in Pakistan, really good dynamic homeopathic doctor there, and she sort of was the center of this. So I taught them, and then they were going to go off and they can treat the people in, but none of them had the confidence to go and practice it, apart from the one lady. I've had more success with the Egyptian group, so that's another way of trying to, so now I don't feel guilty. I can just refer to there.
Right.
So the person still gets the help, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. So people can find you at your website, correct? AlanFreestone.com. Is that correct?
That's it. Yeah. And I have a Facebook group called Effective Autism Treatment. There's about 7,500 people in there now, where you can go. And so most of those, or almost all of those 7,500, they're either existing patients, former patients, or they're thinking of joining either me, or there's another couple of homeopaths that admin the group with me that have very similar approaches. So that's probably a good place to start. My website doesn't get updated as much as I should, because I'm just busy with patients. So
sure.
Effective autism treatment's probably the better place to go. You can even post things anonymously in it if you want to. So some people might want to go, oh, you know, what was your experience? How does it, you know, people answer you honestly, you know?
Right.
and there's a big sort of, often the people there have come from biomed, so they can, there's experience there as well. If you've got, I don't know, an OAT test or Cunningham panel or something like this, you can ask people's advice in that, and there's a wealth of knowledge on it.
Awesome. Well, Alan, thank you so much. Are there any parting words you would like to give our listeners today?
Try homeopathy.